You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. And with me today, I have a very special guest. I've got the magnificent, amazing, and brilliant Clay Morgan Ackerman with me today. Clay, how are we doing, buddy?
I'm phenomenal. How are you doing today, boss?
I am great, man. You know, I was just about to tell everybody how you are the most eligible bachelor in the world right now, and me with a close second right behind. I'm glad you're finally taking time out of your busy schedule to come on here. How is everything?
Everything's phenomenal, man. I'm really top of the world. Can't complain. Living the dream every single day.
That's what I like to hear. Well, Clay, you just finished. You've got a monthly blog, and we've definitely got to talk about it. But you've just done the month of Mel, an entire month dedicated to Mel Gibson. Take the listeners through what that's about.
Well, Mel Gibson's my favorite actor and director, and I really don't think that he's ever got the appreciation that he really deserves. I mean, for a while he was, you know, the king of Hollywood, but being a movie star and being considered an auteur, I don't think that people look at him in the same way they look at, say, a Clint Eastwood, you know, someone who's really got that gravitas who it elevates. And I was just re-looking through his whole filmography, and I realized that I really wanted to focus on all these shared themes and tropes and recurrent things that go on in these movies. And so I figured a daily post about a different film would sort of turn some people on to him, because also I think that he sort of became a joke, you know, full South Park and Family Guy and even a Simpsons that he participated in, but like it's in the pop culture to make a mockery of the guy. So I figured that you should probably open some people's eyes to the quality filmmaking that this guy has put out for 30 years.
Right. And before we go any further, I want to remind everybody, we have a call-in number here. So if you want to talk to Clay directly, you can call in at 718-508-9883. Now, Clay, you bring up some great points about Mel Gibson and his tremendous contributions to the world of film. Take us through what it took for you to put together this blog. I mean, you had to do a lot of films in a very short period of time. Mel Gibson's got quite the filmography.
Well, yeah, and, you know, when I stuck to 31 days, you know, a couple of times I cheated and I doubled up, but for the most part, I did end up sort of sacrificing a lot of stuff from the earlier pre-Lethal Weapon era of his career, you know, and there's a lot of great stuff in there that just didn't get entries, like The Year of Living Dangerously, or, you know, there was a lot of really amazing stuff that came out in that time frame. The Bounty, I didn't even put an entry in. And I mean, that's a very formative film for him. But, you know, if I wanted to give it sort of a weekly themes and daily themes, I felt as though certain things had to take the axe. But, you know, I wanted to focus on him not just as an actor, but as a filmmaker, and how the different films that he had spent in front of the camera sort of taught him how to make these masterpieces that he ended up making in his career. And,
yeah, keep going.
Well, you know, you can look at Mel Gibson's career and it's really four different distinct eras. You know, you got that beginning phase when he was in the international film industry before he comes to Hollywood, you know, everything between the first and the third Mad Max movie. You know, you got your Gallipoli and, you know, Year of Living Danger, the two films he did with Peter Weir. You know, you got The River with Sissy Spacek. Just that one movie with Matthew Modine, the Mrs. Soffel. Well, And he has a lot of range, and it's a lot of passionate projects for him in this time frame. And then he takes a little bit of time before he comes to Hollywood with Lethal Weapon. And from then on, it's a lot of really commercial projects. You know, they're still immensely entertaining and they're really fun. And, you know, they made a lot of money and a lot of people wanted to go see them. But, you know, we're looking at like Bird on a Wire and Air America and Tequila Sunrise. But then when he does Hamlet, right, everything changes. This is when he forms Icon, the film production company, because no one wants to give you money to do Shakespeare. You know, no one wants to finance a Shakespeare movie. Even though Mel was really passionate about it and he, you know, was phenomenal in the role. Everyone was phenomenal. Glenn Close, Helena Bonham Carter, Ian Holm, everybody's really, really good in that Hamlet. But by forming his own production company like that, he's really able to take more control of future projects. And that's when you get stuff like Forever Young and, you know, a lot of everything that he did right up until Man Without a Face and then Braveheart. You know, when he did a couple of Lethal Weapon sequels, you get Maverick, back with Richard Donner again. But Man Without a Face, you know, it's a little personal film. It's really, really amazing. It's a first-time director, Mel, working and sort of figuring out how to do this. And you look at this humble little movie, and then 2 years later, he makes Braveheart. And that's really what kicks off that third phase. You know, Braveheart's immense, and you see it all on the screen. You see all this amazing work, all this costuming and makeup, and, you know, it's one of the biggest undertakings. I mean, it's like a Lord of the – you look at, like, how they made Lord of the Rings or all these huge film sets and stuff like that. And then you look at Braveheart, and you're like, wow, this is a 36-year-old guy making this – huge. You know, you don't even get a sense of the scale or the scope of it. You can't unless you've seen it. It's one of those, it won Best Picture, and it feels as though it's forgotten to this day, but it was such a huge cultural milestone. It left a crater. And then, yeah, you know, you get that.
You know, going off what you're saying here with Braveheart, though, I think one of the things that's so great about Braveheart is not only did it really kind of it was one of those films that I think really showed everybody that, you know, Mel had really arrived, he'd done Lethal Weapon. It seemed like he was kind of, you know, yeah, he was the kind of crazy, kooky character in the movie, and he made things fun and entertaining. But, I mean, his co-star was Danny Glover, who had already been pretty, you know, who at that point was kind of fairly well established, you know. And then you have him in Braveheart, where he is pretty much, he is the guy. He's the lead. He's playing the very charismatic and very relatable William Wallace.
The charisma and the charm, you see, that's sort of what everything in the Lethal Weapon and afterwards, everything up till Braveheart was really about, like being a little charming, charismatic character in these movies, you know? And with Braveheart, definitely, you know, it's right on the heels of Maverick, where, you know, it's more that charming, goofy, sort of Three Stooges-y thing. And then it's a real seriousness. And, I mean, you get a little bit of that in Lethal Weapon, and you get a lot of it in Hamlet, but, you know, Hamlet wasn't successful. And Lethal Weapon is more remembered for the charming, goofy stuff than the amazing, you know, gun in the mouth in the trailer sequence. But, yeah, Braveheart was a real change for him and a real seriousness in his follow-up roles, you know. Because right after that, you got Ransom, you got your Conspiracy Theory, you know. These are more mature films. And, yeah, Conspiracy Theory is a little goofy, but it's still a real wild, twisting, turning ride. And, you know, you jump into Payback and both cuts of that movie. Like, that's one of those rare movies where you can't pick if you prefer the director's cut or the theatrical cut, but, you know, it's really good. And then Patriot, which clearly, you know, you look at The Patriot, and it's a movie made in the shadow of Braveheart. You know, it follows Braveheart exactly. It's almost aping its own style. You know, it's you see that, and this was really like sort of a downturn in Mel's career.
Yeah,
you know, you got What Women Want.
Same formula. Yeah, they basically just took kind of the same formula. We got the Freedom Fighter, there's the Independence, and we're going to tie in, you know, your family is dead, kind of. Because I mean,
yeah, you're real reluctant to join the cause. You want to just be a, but then, oh no, they take it all from you, and it turns out that you're the most badass guy to ever try it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's exactly, it's a carbon copy to the point. Mel had six kids when they were writing it. And then he had a seventh kid, so they wrote in a seventh child for his character before they submitted it to him. They wrote this movie for Mel. You know, they're trying to make Braveheart 2. But, you know, 2002, you get We Were Soldiers and Signs, and then a whole lot of nothing really big in terms of acting again for almost a decade. Well, Singing Detective, but nobody watched that one, but it's a really interesting role for him. But then, you know, it all changes again when he leaves the studio system behind completely when he makes Passion. And, you know, there's a – because there's no real consensus on Passion of the Christ, let's say. I love it. I think it's an amazing film. It's controversial. A lot of people have issues with it, but I think that it's a really amazing movie. And then he follows it right up with Apocalypto, which is, you know, that's the most amazing action movie ever made. Yeah.
You and I talked about Apocalypto before the show. I mean, if you guys haven't seen Apocalypto, it's taking place during essentially the time in which the Aztec Empire is overexpanded and they're on the verge of collapse. And there's all these warring tribes within Central and South America. And
it's
vicious,
a total pre-colonial society.
Yeah, it's vicious, it's brutal, it's very visceral. And more importantly, Clay, tell them what they don't know about the film. Tell them what they don't know about what's so special about the way this film was made.
Well, Apocalypto, Mel had completely foregone any sort of studio involvement. He financed this 100% by himself. You know, did a ton of research, wrote it, goes into Mexico, planning to spend 4 months making this movie. Then there's monsoons, and his sets are getting destroyed, and there's all sorts of – he ends up spending over a year there. And there's a sequence in this movie where a jaguar is chasing our main character while there's another tribe of people chasing him as well. And the jaguar ends up taking out one of his enemies, but – Mel's talked about filming this. You can't train a jaguar. There's no trained jaguars. So they had this one, and they had it on a line, and they use – there's real minimal CGI in the film, but some of it is taking the harness and line off of this thing, and they actually had it chasing the actor. And it's just breathtaking visuals, you know, amazing rapids and waterfalls and action and realistic gore. And an ending that just sort of comes out of nowhere and hits you right in the gut and, you know, changes the entire context of the film. And Mel comes back to Miami and he's editing the movie. And that's when there was that drunk driving incident where he had supposedly said some things. And so the movie was sort of released amid a controversy and it kind of disappeared. It was released on home video by Buena Vista, but now they are not producing it anymore. So good luck finding it if you've never seen it. The Blu-rays are about $100. You'd be paying what it's worth to watch on a 65 on Blu-ray. But, I mean, yeah, you can find some used copies for pretty cheap. But, you know, it's definitely worth looking up.
Yeah, for a time you could watch it on Netflix. I'm not sure if Netflix has cached it over again, but for a time it was available there. You could probably stream it online if you absolutely – couldn't get your hands on a copy, but it's definitely a film worth seeing. But Clay, tell us a little bit more about post-apocalypse Mel Gibson.
Well, in the aftermath of that, Mel took an extended break, you see, and, you know, he had a limited involvement. He was producing some things. But then 2010 rolls around, and there was, in the mid-80s, a television miniseries on Australian TV called Edge of Darkness. And it had Joe Don Baker, and it starred Bob Peck, who plays Robert Muldoon in Jurassic Park, you know, the clever girl guy. Well, they decided to rewrite it as a single film and, you know, set it in Boston. And Mel gets this role, and it's a really interesting role for him. You know, he gets to do an accent in it. And it's a really amazing movie that a lot of people sort of skipped. But Ray Winstone's in it. It's definitely a top five suggestion. And then Jodie Foster, who he'd worked with on Maverick, she directed this film called The Beaver that she put him in. And that's another movie that really didn't get any due because it sort of came out in the shadow of controversy again on a second scandal. But after that, he wrote and starred in a movie with the dude. It was directed by the guy who co-wrote and was the assistant director on Apocalypto. It's called Get the Gringo. And It was really great, but, you know, again, it was a straight-to-DVD, straight-to-the-bargain-bin type of movie because Mel's career was on the rocks. So he follows this up by doing a couple of sequels to movies. He does Expendables 3 and Machete 2, playing the bad guy. He's never played a bad guy before until 2013 when he plays the bad guy in Machete 2, which is a really weird, hammy thing, and it's kind of outside Mel's comfort zone anyway to be, you know, filming a movie in front of green screens in a garage, you know. He's way more into doing big sets and, you know, actual locations and, you know. But it's not bad. He made Bloodfather. Well, he didn't make it, but he starred in it and all the behind-the-scenes stuff. It's the French dude who directed the Assault on Precinct 13 remake. But that's a great film. Bloodfather co-stars Michael Parks in one of his last roles and William H. Macy. And Diego Luna, I believe, is the bad guy in that. But just a really, really amazing movie. A real return to form for Mel, you know. And now he's working on, he did the Daddy's Home 2 movie that sort of put him back squarely in. I mean, he's got an agent again now. He's back doing studio films. But the thing I'm really excited about is he's got a movie coming out in about 6 weeks that he served as the art director on. But the one I'm the most excited about is S. Craig Zoller, the director-writer who did Bone Tomahawk and Brawl in Cell Block 99. Did you see either of those films?
Yes, I did. Bone Tomahawk's awesome.
Yeah, I love those movies. Well, he's got a movie with Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn coming out called Dragged Across Concrete that there's no release date set yet, but I'm very excited for that one because I love Bone Tomahawk and Brawl in Cell Block 99. Those are two big favorites of mine.
Yeah, Bone Tomahawk was pretty cool. I enjoyed it. I didn't see the second film. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, well, it's a really amazing little flick. It's almost as though it's a double feature within one movie, you know. It starts off, Vince Vaughn is this dude, he's sober, his wife is cheating on him. He sort of has a little bit of a breakdown, but he gets things settled down, they decide to give it another chance, but he's just lost his job. So even though they're, like, not relapsing, he starts running drugs again, like he used to. And then things go really bad on a drug deal, and he ends up having to serve 7 years. And it's in a minimum security prison. And, you know, he's not rolling over on no one. He's doing it the right way. He's being an honorable con. But then this dude shows up at the prison to visit him. And they've kidnapped his woman, who's pregnant, and they're, like, going to subject her to some horrible treatment unless he gets himself transferred to another prison and kills this dude who's, like, in the deepest, darkest cell for crazy chomos and stuff. And Don Johnson plays the warden of the second prison. And Udo Kier plays the creepy guy who visits him. Jennifer Carpenter from the show Dexter plays his wife. But it's Vince Vaughn, who Mel worked with in Hacksaw Ridge back in 2016, that he directed, you know. And just really having a good second run of a career. You know, it's like when Matthew McConaughey stopped doing romantic comedies and started doing, like, True Detective, you know. It's like, well, wow, you were always this goofy, stupid thing, but it turns out you really have talent. And, you know, I remember Vince Vaughn trying to do dark stuff back in, like, 1998, doing that Clay Pigeons movie and the Psycho remake. But those were always just, like, embarrassing. But ever since Hacksaw and True Detective Season 2 for him, they both did True Detective. But it's like he's really found his footing and become better than that Bugs Bunny, Ain't I a Stinker thing he's been doing since Swingers.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed Hacksaw Ridge, and Vince Vaughn was actually pretty refreshing in that role. But Clay, I want to take a commercial break before we continue. When we come back, Clay, I want to talk a little bit about some of the upcoming films and get your take on them, and take us through your process and as well of how you're critiquing movies and how you break them down. So we're going to take this break, and I'm going to message you privately. And when we come back, we're going to get into the rest of these things, because this is some really fascinating stuff. Did I lose you, Clay?
No, I'm here.
Okay, cool.
I'm Black Man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the Blackmobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. Pronto.
Will Black Man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin on the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Clay, welcome back, buddy. Sorry I had cut into you there. Sorry I had to cut into you there for a second, or to make sure we got that break in so you and I could go strong the rest of the way. Had you talking up a storm, and I think people are enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. And I hope you're having a good time, Clay.
Oh, I'm having a blast.
All right. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what's coming out, some of the movies that are coming out, what we need to be on the lookout for. I know there's a lot of hype for Avengers Infinity War. Looking at it, looking at what we've seen from Marvel over the last couple of years, what can we expect, Clay? Is it going to be worth it? Are they going to live up to our expectations?
I mean, I think it's going to be the best thing they put out since Civil War. It's built. You know, it's all established. I'm excited for us to get through it is sort of what I'm moving towards. I think that Marvel, my personal theory is that now that they've acquired Fox, is we're going to see Galactus as the next big bad, and we're going to integrate the Fantastic Four into all of this, and they're going to figure out how to do it. They're finally going to crack that nut. And I think that once we get through the whole Thanos thing, we've got a lot still to look forward to in the future. So I don't think it's going to be the whole resolution that we're looking for, because, you know, they're kind of keep building and keep building until, you know,
yes,
all time. But I'm really excited for it. I think that it's going to be phenomenal. Everything I've seen from it looks just really exciting. And, you know, I'm a sucker for the Guardians of the Galaxy. So you put them and yeah.
Next up, I got to know, are you as excited about it as I am, Deadpool 2?
Oh, my God. How great was that trailer?
Oh, my God.
It's going to be awesome. I mean, Cable's going to – it just looks really, really – like they've still got their finger right on the pulse. They know exactly what people liked about the first one. We got – we're going to go in with high expectations, and I think they're going to be perfectly justified. You know, they figured out the perfect formula. It's hard to screw it up now.
Yeah, I mean, for you, is Deadpool going to steal the mantle from the rest of these Marvel movies, or does it have a ways to go? I feel like Deadpool has taken some massive steps with that first film. That just surpassed everybody's expectations. I mean, you know, they made Logan. It was R-rated, and everybody was kind of like, okay, you know, it's a darker Wolverine movie. We wanted something a little bit grittier with superhero movies. We got it. And then Deadpool kind of just blew it up when it hit the theater.
Well, yeah, you talk about stealing the mantle, and I definitely feel as though the first one stole the whole mantle away from the X-Men franchise, which was, you know, boring. It was stale. And they, you know, there were maybe two good ones out of six, and two out of six is bad, you know, and it was like the middle part of each little trilogy was the good one, and then the last part of this Wolverine solo trilogy was the good one. But you talk about that darker, grittier thing, you know, Logan came out and it was really good, but do you remember the Punisher Warzone film from 2008?
Yes.
Which was a really hard R, and it was under, they called it Marvel Knights, which I thought was an interesting, because, you know, that was the name of the mid-2000 thing that, like, Brian Michael Bendis and the Garth Ennis Punisher, the pre-Max Punisher stuff. And, I don't know, I really have a little soft spot in my heart for Punisher Warzone, and I feel like it got a really bad reputation, and a lot of people hated it, and truth be told, I can kind of understand, but also, I think it's a little undiscovered gem. I think a lot of people didn't give it a shot. And I don't know. I think that they're going to continue to do these. I think it's going to move the whole everything into a more wacky direction, you know? Like, it's definitely going to influence the future X-Men films.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. What do you think about what The Rock is doing? You know, The Rock made some interesting films. Some of them have been good. You know, I mean, the Rundown was obviously pretty entertaining. It was comedic. It was entertaining. I mean, he did that very emotionally driven Gridiron Gang. Now he's doing Rampage.
I mean, I don't think Rampage is really going to be anything special, but I do got to defend The Rock because I really think he's one of the best movie stars we have out there. Just a tremendous range, does a whole lot of really interesting stuff. And, I mean, I do always look forward to his movies, and I've been wrong before. I thought Pain and Gain was going to be terrible, but I love that movie, you know, and I mean, it might end up surprising me. He surprised me before. I was one of the biggest pre-haters for Central Intelligence. And I watched it, and I was like, well, this isn't nearly as bad as I've been saying it's going to be. I'm incorrect on this one. But,
yeah.
I mean, it'll probably be entertaining. Jumanji was great. He did that one movie with Billy Bob Thornton, Snitch, that I was...
Yeah,
oh, that just blew me away. I love that movie.
Now we also—it looks like we're also getting a remake release, Overboard. Now,
really?
Yeah, you know, and I believe it's set to come out this year, but I believe it's a remake of the original 1987. And my big thing, its release date is in May. My big thing is I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan. Kurt Russell was my guy growing up. He was, you know, he was one of those guys that was in movies that you knew weren't great, but it was okay because Kurt Russell was in it.
I was gonna say that seems like the least offensive Kurt Russell movie to try to remake. Like, if they try to remake his other stuff, I'm like, I'm good. But I could watch an Overboard remake. But yeah, Kurt's the man.
I mean, I love Kurt. He was the 80s sort of rugged action star that we needed and didn't deserve, I felt like. But that's my thing on him. That's my own personal thing. But it's got Eugenio Derbez and Anna Faris, I believe, as the leads. I think that's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'll check it out. I'm not the biggest Anna Faris fan in the world, but I mean, she's done some good stuff. But wow, yeah, it just Kurt and the work that he did with John Carpenter, especially. You know, that was you know, you talk about like seeing films when you're a kid that, you know, affect you, like, you know, Star Wars or E.T. You know, you feel that
Stargate,
way about
man.
Like Big Trouble. Oh yeah, Stargate.
That's my thing. And don't forget the Escape from New York, Escape from Los Angeles.
Escape from L.A. used to play all the time on Cinemax, and so I saw that probably a half a dozen times before I saw Escape from New York. And, yeah, so to this day, I still have a big affinity for L.A. Even, you know, all the cheese involved, I still love it.
And then the cheddar of Big Trouble, Little Chinatown will always hold a special place in my heart.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to not love that, though. And he's continued through his career, even all the way up to Bone Tomahawk and, you know, The Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
And he still picks interesting, unique projects. And I just love the guy.
Yeah. He's one of those guys I felt like he's paid his dues. He's been in some movies. Next up on the docket, I got to ask you, Super Troopers 2. How do you feel about that? I know the first one, people either really hated it or they just enjoyed it. I found myself kind of in the middle on it. It had its moments. It's sort of a – I don't want to give it the credit of Van Wilder-esque, but it had that campy, comical tone in the first one. What do you think we can expect from the second one? Do you think it'll be a dud or do you think it'll live up to the hype?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I am a huge Super Troopers fan. You know, there's a couple of comedies that a lot of people don't care for that I tend to be big proponents of. You know, I love Cabin Boy with Chris Elliott. I love Death to Smoochie. You know, I like those movies that were not exactly that big, but I mean, Super Troopers had a big cult following. And
yes,
it brings a lot of fun, and I mean, it's super quotable. Me and my sister, you know,
I want to leave.
It's
cola,
like
man.
An Anchorman level, huh?
Yeah, cola.
Yeah, but my thing though, I've seen it too much lately, and I get excited every time, and I always feel like the putz of all putzes when I go and I pay money, where, oh, that comedy was super formative and super quotable. I'll go see a Joe Dirt 2. Well, I'll watch it on Crackle. But, like, I'll go see a Bad Santa 2. I'll go pay for an Anchorman 2. And I'll go see Zoolander 2. And without fail, every single time, I think the only comedy sequel I've ever liked was Next Friday. I don't think that comedy sequels work, especially when you've got nearly two decades in between.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it ever is going to pull it off. And
now,
it can only retroactively hurt the first one.
There's three other really, I mean, well, arguably four, depending on who you ask. But there's four really other big movies that are coming out that I think are going to kind of fall in the shadow of Deadpool 2. But nonetheless, going to probably carve out a heck of a niche for themselves. We have Solo, A Star Wars Story, Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom, The Incredibles 2, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. But I mean, there's these, and in between them, there's some possibility for some gems. But out of those four movies, which one of them do you think we should look forward to the most? I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, no, it's cake. It's real easy. Incredibles 2 is where it's at. I mean, you know, I just disparaged long spaces between sequels. But that's the one that I will go to immediately before I'll go see any of the other ones. And I'll watch them all. You know, I'll definitely watch that Jurassic World new one. And, you know, I'm a sucker for dinosaurs since I was seven. You know, I ain't
Jurassic
hard to please
World
when there's dinosaurs.
Hurricane.
But, yeah, I think Incredibles 2 is going to be the real big one. That's going to be the big, bright, shining star.
I mean, for me, Jurassic World, I went to go see it. I had high expectations. I grew up watching Jurassic Park. I have every single Jurassic Park movie except that one. I read the books before the movies. I was stoked, and then Jurassic World happened, and I was like, I wonder what they're going to do with this. And then they had raptors and Chris Pratt being Chris Pratt in all of his Chris Pratty glory, you know, being the good-looking, charming bastard that he is, making me very jealous about being him. But he's out there training raptors. And I remember as a kid, those raptors were like the scariest thing in Jurassic Park. I mean, everybody else is talking T-Rex. I'm like, forget that. Those raptors are fast. And then they were like akin to dogs in Jurassic World. And I kind of...
Yeah, but here's the thing. I will defend it. And so many people want to disparage it. And I agree. It's not as good as the first one. But it's from a different era. And it makes sense that it's sort of an extension. I mean, it's the idea that you can genetically train them, you know, and, like, make them more docile and all this stuff. It works with the concept.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
You know, they were never dinosaurs to begin with. They were always some little amalgamation bastard thing. And,
like,
so I'm not going to shit on the movie itself. It's not perfect by any means, but I still went and I paid money and I enjoyed it, and then I got it on the Blu-ray DVD combo pack. But
I paid money.
I honestly, here was my thing. I try and rewatch the old ones, right? Because I got a nephew, and he's young, and he loved Jurassic World. And his favorite one is 3. And You know what makes me like three? I like watching both Taya Leone and William H. Macy do, and Sam Neill all do the worst movie of their career at the same time.
Yes.
Like the first movie, I will go down and say that it's not as good as we all like to think. Jurassic Park has a dead hour in it. A dead hour where the characters are having a compelling conversation, but there's no real fun, and you just keep delaying and delaying. And you get Spielberg magic throughout and people seeing things, but it's kind of boring for us, the audience. And, you know, it doesn't really still hold my attention.
I still love the original Jurassic Park, but I have to agree. That is one of the slowest burns of any film ever made.
Yeah, there's just so much time where no one's seeing nothing, nothing's happening. It's like, it's good characterization. And, you know, you get that great Goldblum stuff where he's, you know, smacking on a lunchbox and you sell it, and, you know. But still, it's narratively, it's not moving forward until Newman gets killed by the dinosaur. He gets spit in his face. And then the movie's, like, sort of back on track. But, I don't know.
But I have to agree with you. I think Incredibles 2 is gonna be the one. How do you feel about these Star Wars spinoffs? I myself have not been a fan of the new Star Wars. I am gonna drag my feet. Force Awakens disappointed me. I felt like there was a lot of inconsistency. And then they make the new Star Wars before that there was so much inconsistency character wise for me. Rogue One, I felt like, was a return, but only because it was a story we already kind of knew. And now they've got Solo. And I don't know how to feel about it. I'm kind of half in, half out. Where are you at with this?
Well, I'll tell you what. I grew up with Star Wars being a thing from before my time. I was born in 1986, so I have not been alive when they ever made a good Star Wars movie. All the good ones predate my birth. So, but, you know, I played with the toys and I watched them over and over again, and I absolutely loved them. And when they did the CGI ones, I went to the theater. And I've watched, you know, ever since 1999, I've watched my fandom just slip away completely and just be disappointed every time I go.
Yep.
So I can't really get that jazz to go. And it seems like it's a lot of stunt casting in this one with the Game of Thrones girl and the Donald Glover. So, I don't know. It's not going to be a skip for me, but almost like it's out of obligation. I'm still going to keep watching these movies forever. You know, keep shoveling this crap out, and I'll pretend to be four again and watch it.
You know, my thing with the Star Wars, you know, the new Star Wars movies, when we had the original Star Wars, there was a story. We all knew we knew what the story was, right? It was all about his rise to power. You know, they discover him when they did the prequels, but it was all about Anakin and his story of, you know, his fall and his redemption. You know, these new Star Wars, they don't seem to have a story. The last one I felt like was a huge slap in the face to the fandom of Star Wars. I don't know if you'll agree with me, but when Luke Skywalker was hiding like a coward for the majority of the film, he was the most powerful Jedi other than his dad, and he took on the Emperor and his dad in the original storyline, and they made him out to be a punk.
Yeah, he was a total. Here's the thing. I was really happy when I went to The Last Jedi 5 minutes in when I saw Adrian Edmondson play an Imperial officer or a First Order officer.
Yes.
And then for the rest of the movie, I just wanted to go home. I'm a big fan of Bottom and the Young Ones. And so I was like, hey, look, it's Eddie. And then, oh, okay. Well, it's time to go. But no, there's another 2 hours, and it was just boring. It didn't have any thrust, and the characterization was all wrong. It was character assassination. And
I'm glad somebody agrees with me. I got to ask you, Kylo Ren saying he's the guy now. He's the Sith Lord guy. But there was so much inconsistency. I remember how excited I got when we saw The Force Awakens and Kylo Ren stops a laser bolt in midair, and he just stands there and he's talking. He does his evil monologue. You know, he's patrolling, looking at the soldiers. This laser bolt is just staying in midair. And then later he gets beat down like a pansy by a chick that just barely learned how to use the Force and a stormtrooper who had a change of heart who just picks up a lightsaber and thinks that he can fight with it.
Well, I will say that out of everything that's been since the Disney acquisition, the character of Kylo Ren is probably the best handled thing in these new movies. I mean, it may not make sense exactly within the world that they've built, but then again, this whole franchise has been nothing but inconsistencies for, you know, the longest time, you know. I mean, the Millennium Falcon made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. Nothing makes sense in this world. It's all stupid. But I do like the character more than, like, anything else that I'm getting from these movies. I like Kylo Ren. I'm enjoying his journey is the most enjoyable thing about these new ones.
Well, and not to mention in the newest one, they talk about characters and then they just spit in your face. They kill them off like with reckless abandon. We have Snoke. They talk about him and you're like, oh, Snoke, that sounds scary. You know, he's the guy that's pulling he's the guy that's running, then boom, he's dead. You're like, what? No backstory? No nothing? This guy's okay, all right, this is what we're doing now. Like,
yeah, and it almost feels as though they're like, yeah, well, we're going to build our own expanded universe again. You'll be able to find out all this stuff in books. And it's like, oh, I mean, you built the guy up. I kind of want to know what his whole everything about him is. And, you know.
Yeah, well, we've got a couple more films, though. What are your thoughts about Ant-Man and the Wasp coming out? I mean, how did you feel about the first one? Did you watch it? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. First Ant-Man was a total breath of fresh air. I loved that movie. I thought that the casting was really good. I think that it fits into the whole MCU really well. I'm a big fan of it. I think that the second one is going to be pretty interesting. It's going to open it up more. It's going to bring it more into this umbrella, this whole world. And, you know, they wouldn't be making it if it wasn't going to be another important piece of the puzzle. And
right.
I'm pretty excited about it.
You know, and that's going to bring me to one of my next questions for you. We've been talking about the MCU. We've talked about some of these big franchises and moving forward. What does DC need to do to get on track? I mean, I'm assuming you've seen the DC movies and the Marvel movies, and you know, a lot of people would say that Marvel has the upper hand. Now, I myself, I've always been a DC fan. I love the comics. Aquaman's my favorite superhero, but you can't deny, I can't deny it, Marvel has the better track record. I think you have to do that to break this.
First of all, DC shouldn't even be trying to compete in the film enterprise because it consistently dropped the ball. And
it does.
They're better in every other respect. Their animated features far exceed even what's going on in the MCU. I will go on record and say that the DC animated films are better than the theatrical Marvel films. And if only they could translate what they're doing in their animated universe to an actual film franchise, that would be so great. That would be so great. But no, instead they're doing these super self-important, overstuffed. I'm just not a fan of any of it.
I mean, I was excited that I got to see Justice League, but I was only excited because I got to see Wonder Woman again. I got to see The Flash, finally. Cyborg, finally. I don't know what we've been waiting on for that. And then Aquaman, finally. But when you look at Marvel, and I want to get your take on this too. But this is my theory with Marvel and DC. Marvel has done a tremendous job in getting even their more obscure characters screen time and getting you invested in them and caring about them.
DC has a plethora of superheroes who people know or have, or and some that people don't know, that would make compelling stories that we'll probably never see on the screen. So, but why, I don't know. But you look at the success that Marvel has had with characters like Ant-Man, and you know, and I would argue
Daredevil, and
Daredevil.
I mean, yeah, their television enterprises. Yeah, it's they're amazing.
And I mean, you look at Marvel. Ant-Man's really not that big of a hero, and I mean, you know, politics aside, Black Panther, as cool as his character was, and I enjoyed that film. I really did, but he's not that big of a hero in the MCU either. As far as the, you know, the grand scheme of things, you look at the MCU, you know, the big names are probably the X-Men, you know, obviously Wolverine, the Hulk, Thor, you know, Iron Man, you know.
Yeah.
The,
and
the
those
Avengers
aren't even like, you know, for years, Marvel, the comic book, you know, the one they'd put on the cover of everything was like, they were like, we're the company that makes the Fantastic Four. And we're the company that makes Spider-Man movies. But ever since Jon Favreau comes in, and that's the difference, you see. Marvel gets these filmmakers who are passionate, and, like, you know, you get a James Gunn, someone who's got an idea, like that kid who made Black Panther, and you bring them in and you let them do things. And DC, every time they make a movie, ever since they, you know, they banked on Christopher Nolan, and those were, they paid dividends, but you can't, you know, keep bringing that back over and over again because it's time to reboot. And so they always value commerce over the art. And so they're trying to bring in people, you know, not people who are really passionate about the work, just people who, you know, well, we know they're a workhorse. And that's not really good. I mean, and they drop the ball constantly. You look at their TV output. I mean, I know it had a big following, but I was never a fan of Smallville. I think Gotham is terrible. Legends of Tomorrow is not good. I hear a lot of good things about The Flash, but I almost feel as though I've been let down so many times. So many times. I mean, that every time they've tried to handle the John Constantine in anything, he should be the most cinematic, easy-to-handle thing, and they just drop that ball. How about how many times they've done Swamp Thing wrong? I'm a gigantic Swamp Thing fan.
Don't even get me started on Swamp Thing, okay? Because that really hurt me that they dropped the ball on that.
And what it should be so easy to do a Swamp Thing show. It should be so easy.
Gift-wrapped. They were gift-wrapped a tremendous story.
Yeah. They don't know how to – they're trying to pick people who are like, well, this person, you know, it's supposed to be this type of movie, and this person makes this type of movie, so let's put them in this instead of, like, well, here comes someone who's got an idea. And, I mean, you look at all those Marvel Phase 1 movies, everything after Iron Man, it was all sort of trying to do that Jon Favreau thing that Iron Man 1 had, and it gave it a consistency. And so, I mean, it made it work when it all comes together. It wasn't like, you know, totally jarringly different things. And then they could start to introduce that in Phase 2 and 3. And, I mean, you can get, like, these weird out there ones like Guardians or Doctor Strange.
Uh-huh.
And then you can bring it all in and it makes it feel real. And, I mean, it's really sort of admirable the way they do that. But with DC, they're just throwing everything in and trying to mix it up and be like, huh, check it out. We did it all. And it's like, you're doing a diorama here. It's not even there's no heart behind it. It's like a Transformers movie. It sucks, you know?
It does. And I don't care what anybody says. Transformers is trash, okay? But here's something I want to run past you. I have an idea. I have an idea for how DC can turn it around. I have a list of names, and I want to get you your yay or nay on each one if you think that if done right, these could be the compelling thing, these could be the compelling heroes that DC needs right now. Teen
Righteous.
Titans.
Oh, absolutely.
Now that we have Cyborg, we've got to have a compelling cast for Teen Titans. It's got to happen. Adam.
Yeah.
I'm liking this. I need a Bizarro storyline.
Ooh. Yeah, that'd be great. You know, I want to see, like, a really decent Superman series.
I feel like Henry Cavill was great in Man of Steel. That's just my personal opinion. I really enjoyed him. I'd like to see
a Mr. Mixelplick here, you know?
Yeah. Even if Cavill has to be Bizarro and Superman, I'm okay with it. I mean, I've heard that Shazam is in the works. I think what DC needs, Black Canary.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to get that. We need the femme fatale. Look, Marvel has crushed it with Black Widow. She is huge in Marvel. The only thing that DC has as far as, like, female super, and don't even get me started on Phoenix and the X-Men, Rogue, all the female characters that Marvel has put out, DC is really dropping in that department.
Well, there was a DC comic for a while that I always thought really should have translated onto a television series and been able to, like, have guest stars from, like, the movies, you know, into it. It was called Gotham Central was what it was called. And it was Ed Brubaker, and it was, you know, just a police procedural set in Gotham City where, you know, the top of the police station, there was a bat signal, and the commissioner would come through, and like half of the cops really felt salty about this vigilante. But, you know, they were always getting killed by someone's henchman, and it made for a really good, it was like the Shield in Gotham. And that really could revitalize their TV presence from being this like childish, goofy, the CW crap, you know?
Yes.
I don't think anything good's ever come from the CW. I know there's a lot of Supernatural fans out there, but let me tell you a little story. There's no such thing as a good show that ran for 13 seasons.
You're right about that. All right, I've got another one for you. I got to know how you feel about it. We've got an unkillable hero in Marvel, but there is in DC Universe a virtually unkillable death machine who was teased at the end of Justice League but not necessarily given to us as a guarantee, and that's Deathstroke.
You didn't feel like that was a guarantee?
I didn't feel guaranteed that I'm getting Deathstroke in a standalone. He might show up as a villain for Team Titans, which he's supposed to. That's a given, I feel like. But I would like to see a Deathstroke movie.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure that they really do that unless the Venom movie with Tom Hardy comes out and makes a ton of money. Then they'll probably want to bank on that to try and replicate that, because that's all that Warner Brothers and DC seems to realize how to do, is to see what someone else does and then try and do that. So I think we'll get that if Venom, you know, really makes some money. Then they'll try and do it. It won't be as good.
Interesting scenario here. We saw the success of Black Panther, and I know that, you know, I'm not big into politics. I'm not a big political proponent. I don't like getting wrapped up in these conversations, and I know that you're not as big of a fan, but I know that Black Panther received rave reviews, and part of the reason why is because an African-American superhero, which, yes, it's been done before, Blade and Spawn, but...
Luke Cage.
Luke Cage. This was majority African-American. You know, the scene was so unique. The storyline was rich. They made Black Panther and the villain both really, really, you know, good. And I agree
compelling.
With that. I think they were both really good. I think they nailed that. But how much success could DC have, as sour grapes as this could be, if they put out the first Latin American superhero movie with Blue Beetle?
Ooh, I don't think it would really even cause a ripple, like, as terms of controversy, and I think that people would really jump into it, and I think that, you know, he'd make a bigger splash on the page too, because, you know, they'd be cashing in on a movie. I'd love to see that.
that would be really amazing. Not to mention,
but I think we'd probably get a Spawn movie, another Spawn movie first, you know?
Yeah, probably.
But, I mean, not to mention the fact that Blue Beetle and the Nuclear Man, or Firestorm, as most people come to call him now, thanks to Injustice, but both of them are heads of Young Justice League. And there's rumors that we will get Young Justice League, but could we do a Blue Beetle standalone movie? Could it happen? Do you think that that is doable?
I mean, it's not. I don't think that there's enough framework there. I think that the whole DC universe, cinematic universe, will probably fold in on itself before we get to that. Before we start looking at Booster Gold movies, you know, I don't. It's just such diminishing returns. I don't think it can hold up at this level. I really doubt that we'll ever get, like, the really obscure ones getting movies unless, you know, it's, you know, Warner Brothers will really be needing someone else to be covering costs, you know.
I
really don't see it holding up. After Justice League?
I weep to think that you and I will never see a good, well-done Swamp Thing movie or a well-done Phantom Stranger movie.
Oh, gosh. That'd be, like, seriously, though, they probably could do an amazing television series. Like, people would, remember there was some news that came out a couple of years ago about possibly M. Night Shyamalan rebooting Tales from the Crypt for TNT?
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of didn't amount to nothing. But if they did a House of Mysteries show, like a weekly, you know, every episode's different, people like that Black Mirror thing, you know, sort of a weekly horror series like that, then you could sort of branch out from that. And I think that it wouldn't be hard to get someone who's really passionate about the material to do a phenomenal, phenomenal Swamp Thing movie. Because it's almost shocking how badly they've handled it, because it should be the easiest thing to do. I mean, it's so cinematic, and it's such a cool story, and it's so, like,
it's
timeless, and people could do it. Mm.
And out of all the heroes that we've seen on screen, despite the monstrosity that Swamp Thing becomes, he's probably the most human. And sadly, I don't think you and I will ever get to see that, and that's a shame. I got a couple other questions for you, Clay. We got some time left. I definitely, we're on the right track here. We've kind of gotten an idea of what DC needs to do, should be doing. If you're not listening to Clay, and I don't know what you're doing with your life right now, but you need to get on it. But I've got to ask you, we have some other films that are coming up, that are coming out. I know you mentioned a couple that you're excited about. How do you feel about the recent trend of superhero movies in general, and what superhero movies do you want to see more of? Like, specifically ones we've already got, what characters do you want to see more of on the screen?
Well, I mean, honestly, out of the current crop of everything, if you just, you know, just give James Gunn $1 billion and tell him to do, you know, 4 Guardians movies for me.
Yeah.
And because that's like, oh, that's been the biggest breath of fresh air. I mean, there was a while there when comic book movies were trying to be slavishly observant to the source material, and we ended up getting just unwatchable stuff like Sin City and Watchmen. And I mean, it was novel and it was different, but it's not good and it doesn't hold up, at least to me. And I mean, it's like that thing that Alan Moore says about how, you know, it doesn't really translate. Sequential art doesn't exactly, you know, it's not built to move to a different medium. And it's very busy sometimes, and it clogs up, and it's, you almost want to watch something really small and personal. It's like you want to put on My Dinner with Andre after, you know, you get home from the newest Avengers movie. And I'd like to see more smaller stories, things where it's not always the fate of the world. I mean, who didn't love Thor 3? Because, I mean, it had, like, the whole big climactic thing at the end, but it felt smaller and more personal, and I really enjoyed that one. I'd love to see more stuff like that.
I think that out of all the Thor movies, that was Hemsworth. Be Hemsworth. I really felt like that.
Yeah, definitely.
That movie. You know, you had, I mean, you had Jeff Goldblum, you had the Hulk, and the Hulk is always very fun to have on the, you know, for the most part, pretty fun to have on the screen. I mean, I know he's made some and had some questionable Hulk movies, but I think that is what really helped that movie along.
To see, I mean, when I went into the Avengers, the next Marvel movie that I was the most excited about was Thor 2. That totally flipped.
Yeah. You still there, Clay? Did I lose you, Clay? We lost Clay for a moment, guys. We're going to have him back in just a second. For that, guys. Weather here can be a little bit nasty. We just lost Clay. We had it going on, though, guys. We had it going on. I think Clay was trekking really well with that as far as the Avengers go. I personally enjoyed Thor Ragnarok myself. I really enjoyed that film. I thought it was funny. They let Chris be Chris. The Hulk smashed things. Thor hit things with his hammer. It was a good time. Right? It was good time to have a comedic movie, kind of in the wake of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it also kind of helped the Thor Ragnarok movie. And when we get Clay back, hopefully we'll get him back. I'm going to try to get him back right now here. One second, guys. See if we can get Clay back on here. One second, everybody. Sorry about that. Back in here. Don't know if we lost him or get four receptions. In the meantime, guys,
your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 419
on his social media websites. You want to follow Clay on his social media. He has he's got his own Facebook, obviously. You can follow him at Clay Ackerman. Clay Morgan Ackerman, I believe, is his blogging account. One second, guys. He's trying to get back in here. You can follow him at Clay Morgan Ackerman. His last name is spelled A-K-E-R-M-A-N. Definitely going to want to follow him on his social media site there. He's got a lot of cool stuff there. Ah, here we go. Now he's back. Hello.
Hey, sorry I lost you.
No problem, Clay. Glad to have you back, man. We still got you here. I was just pitching your social media. Now that you're back, let's get back to the top on hand. We do apologize, guys. Every once in a while, reception can be a troubleshoot for us with guests and the like. Glad you're back, Clay.
Yeah, that was my bad. Sorry.
We were talking about Thor Ragnarok, and I was making the point in your absence that I felt like Guardians of the Galaxy and how, you know, free and fun and comedic it was, but also had that tone of seriousness. I think that kind of a little bit too with Thor Ragnarok, because Thor Ragnarok sort of accompanied that second film, and that, I think, let Chris Hemsworth and the makers of Thor, I think, and Thor Ragnarok know that, hey, you guys, we can let Thor be funny. It's okay. We can let the characters be human a little bit.
Oh, yeah, because he was hilarious in the first one. I mean, Thor 1 was like one of those great splash-style, fish-out-of-water movies. And, I mean, you got a lot of fun out of him, you know, breaking conventions of polite society. You know, I love that movie. And
I love the character, and I like that he didn't just become this dry, serious, boring, you know, where everything has to, where the stakes are always so high, you know,
right.
So you don't have time to have some fun.
Right, and I mean, who is ever going to forget? Those of you who haven't seen the movie, you're gonna want to see this movie, but. Who's ever going to forget the great line in Thor Ragnarok? Is it's okay, we're friends from work. I mean, the timing of Thor, his comedic timing in the movie was spot on. That's what I really loved about the movie. Really was that Chris Hemsworth was allowed to be Chris Hemsworth again, and I think that allowed Thor Ragnarok to be so much more fun than some of the movies we've seen here recently, is that it didn't take itself too seriously.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, I think that Hemsworth is a really good actor. Like, I remember when they were making American Sniper, and they had cast
mm-hmm.
Bradley Cooper, and I thought, so, wow, what a missed opportunity, because I really thought that Chris... that would have been an amazing role for him to show us another side of him, because I do think that he is a really good actor and not just like this, you know, action guy or this funny guy. I think that he has a lot to offer. And I think he's going to have a long storied career, so we're going to get to see that eventually.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, you know, Clay... I have to agree with you. I want to see more Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm selfish. Even though I'm a DC fan, I love DC. I'm excited for Aquaman. If they ever release the movie, I'll be happy about that. I also am excited for Flash and its potential. I did like Ezra Miller. How did you feel about Ezra Miller as the Flash?
Ezra Miller was an absolute scene stealer in Justice League. He was the brightest spot of that movie. And... my prediction is that Aquaman's going to come out. It's going to get about the same reaction that Wonder Woman did. People are going to be like, this is great. It's so much better than the crappy one we just watched.
Yeah.
And then I think that the Flash movie's going to come out, and they're going to try and stuff so much into it, and it's going to be this big, overblown Flashpoint movie. And I've got low expectations, even though I should have the highest because of how good he was in Justice League.
I'm scared for the Flash. I'm not going to lie. I'm very excited for Aquaman. I love Aquaman. I've been waiting for him to get a film. I feel like Jason Momoa has the opportunity to turn Aquaman into the Aquaman from the comics, who was actually pretty badass. I mean, in the comics, he's badass. You know, I know in Justice League cartoons and in the animated series, and really even in more, you know, popular culture, Aquaman's been made a joke, but Aquaman's one of the more powerful members of the Justice League. And I think
he's like the Mel Gibson of the Justice League.
Pretty much. I mean, he really kind of is. And you look at Ezra Miller as the Flash, you know, a lot of people were like, you know, why didn't they just get the guy from the show? This is stupid. And then Ezra Miller came on, and he was such a breath of fresh air. He was what I wanted Spider-Man to be. The quippy,
yeah, he was confident,
quirky,
he was fun,
yeah, the quippy, quirky, you know, little street punkish kid who's, you know, still stumbling around, still trying to find, you know, his place, which is really what
Spider-Man
are. Huh?
But he's like playing with the grown-ups, you know, he's like trying to prove himself, and yeah, it's a great little, you know, character trope, and I mean, I loved him in it. I really did. Like, throughout the whole suffering of Justice League, he was the best part of it by far.
And I'm not gonna.
He
lie.
Was like having a really fun cellmate in prison.
Yeah, right. I'm not gonna lie. I liked Justice League, but I'm gonna tell you, Justice League was not a good movie. I enjoyed it because I was excited to see some of the heroes we hadn't seen before, but it was not a good movie. It just wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't. The storyline was rushed.
there was just this, the movie seemed to be more about like, okay, let's try and fix what we did in Batman versus, and then we'll ruin it.
Yeah, it was the exact opposite of what you wanted to do. Like, either continue on your path and keep doing this thing, or completely junk it and totally recorrect. But they didn't do anything of that. They, like, split the difference. And they were like, well, we're still trying to keep it consistent with this while undoing all of that. And it was, I know what it's like when you go into a movie and you're real excited and you can't wait to see it and then it's trash. And you walk out and you're like, well, it was garbage, but I loved it because it was what I thought it was going to be. You know, I remember leaving Machete and being like, oh, what? Or, you know, all sorts of movies are terrible that I went and seen that I was excited to go see. And then as I left the theater, completely exhausted from this experience. Like, I remember going driving 45 miles to go to a Grindhouse midnight showing. And say what you will about that. I mean, the best part of Grindhouse was the fake trailers in the middle. And you leave that theater at 3:15 in the morning after just watching the most self-indulgent, but you still enjoyed it. You walk home, you get home, and you tell everybody, oh, man, I went and saw Grindhouse. You'd love it.
Yeah, you go in and you lie. You guys will love it.
Because it was fun for you, but it wouldn't be fun for anyone else.
you know? And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I went to see Justice League. I actually own it, you know, because I'm like, I got all these other superhero movies. Why not? Let's do it. Let's go. But, you know, Justice League was one of those movies where it was like, we're halfway into this. Let's, you know, do we want to go all the way with no Superman? No, let's reel it back in. And what I think really killed Justice League was not only, like, the rush where they kind of just like, all right, let's mismatch, let's get this freaking team together, come on, let's go, let's make our bad guy kind of look like a threat, but not like too much of a threat, because the Justice League still got to win. Like, they did that, and then at the end, then towards the, like, you know, later stages of the movie, they're like, all right, now we got to bring in Superman, because he's the only one that can do this. And I think the big disservice that they did to the rest of the characters in the movie was, you know, they barely survive their bad guy, and then Superman comes in and basically bats clean up and just makes everybody else look like they don't even need to be there. And, you know, while some people would have said, well, yeah, he's Superman, and that's kind of what he does, the Justice League was a lot more even than that in the animated series.
And thematically, it would have fit more to not have Superman in this film, to have it build you know, the idea that, oh, we figured out how to, you know, like, have that be the little tag at the end instead of the Deathstroke thing. You know, have that be your little post-credit scene. Because, you know, you can show the teamwork and all this before they have, you know, this unstoppable machine as part of it. It would have worked so much more thematically. And it's really sort of a shame. There's so many missed opportunities with the Justice League. And it almost feels like a reverse of what happened with those Hobbit films, where at the last minute they turned two into three and it became this bloated garbage mess. I mean, this wasn't this Justice League supposed to be two films, like a part one and a part two? It really should have been that. And it still ended up being this big overbloated garbage thing, but I don't know. It really would have been better if it was six acts instead of three.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. But, you know, we spent some time here in the last couple of minutes. We got a few minutes left. Clay, I want you to pitch your blog and pitch what you've got going on. Let people know, how can they get in touch with you? How can they follow you and stay on top of your projects?
The best place to follow me is on my Facebook page, because that's where I post all my film criticism and reviews. It's Clay Morgan Ackerman on Facebook. I'm the charming, handsome fellow with the amazing hair. And right now, my big thing that I'm working on is is I am writing a book about Mel's career. I've recently gotten in touch with Icon Productions. I'm hoping to get a response from them, but I'm going to try and figure out some sort of way because I want to get some questions answered about production of certain films that there's really not too much information about. But, yeah, I've been writing this book about his entire output. And, I mean, it's not about Mel the Man or his personal life or his, you know, charitable donations or – I mean, I just am talking about his work, his output, and the themes that run through there, like, you know, loss of a loved one, spurring one into action, war films. You know, he has certain themes that he goes back to over and over again. And you see as he matures or how he plays it different, you know, being like the one sane man and no one believes you. You know, there's certain themes that he does particularly well, and he does them frequently. And so that's really been taking up a lot of my time right now, compiling and working on that, you know, pretty much nonstop. And, yeah, so who knows what'll ever happen with that, but that's my current output, is just trying to get in touch with some people to let me pad out a couple of chapters on some of these films that really the only thing that they have to speak for themselves is the actual film. And, you know, so that's really what I've been working on.
You're a busy man, Clay. I appreciate you coming on. I know how it is to have a jam-packed schedule. So before you go, Clay, tell everybody what they should most do that's coming out or any projects that you know of that people should give a chance.
Ooh. Well, coming out, I mean, I mentioned Dragged Across Concrete, the Mel Gibson, Vince Vaughn, S. Craig Zahler film. That's the one that I'm really the most jazzed about. But, there's a season 2 of Westworld is picking up this year. In just a few weeks, and that's really the big one to feast your eyes on. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch season 1 of that, but that was some really revelatory television, and probably the best thing I've seen from HBO since season 1 of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm at that point with Game of Thrones now, where as much as I have enjoyed the series, wrap it up, let's go.
Yeah.
That's what
I'm ready to be in my little box and be done and not care anymore. You know, yeah, it's no Sopranos. It's not even an Oz at this point. I mean, I love the show and I'll watch it whenever it's new, but man, oh man, it's just endless speculation that I need to end now.
Yeah, I'm at that point with Game of Thrones. Another series that I just really think needs to end is The Walking Dead. It needs to end. It's time. Bring that crap to a close, please.
Oh, they're never gonna. It's gonna meander forever. It's gonna run for 500 issues and 13 seasons. It might as well be the next Supernatural.
Yeah. Oh. Well, Clay, I'm glad I got you on. We're definitely going to have you back on here, guys. This is Clay Morgan Ackerman with me here at the Bareback Facts. Clay, take it easy. You know how to get in touch with me, man. Let me know
what
your schedule's like. I definitely got to have you on, man. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me on, and I thank you very kindly.
Thank you, sir. You take it easy. Get in touch with me. We'll stay connected. You have a good day, sir.
You too, boss.
Guys, we had a great interview there with Clay Morgan Ackerman. You heard where to follow him. Follow him on Facebook. He's got a lot going on. Hopefully, all the best to him with his book. Hope he gets all that ironed out. I know what it's like to have all these projects in the back burner. This guy spent a lot of time on his blog. It was great picking his brain over some of these films. If you guys agree with Clay or don't agree with Clay, or you agree with me and don't agree with me, feel free to hit us up on social media and let us know how you feel about it. Hit up Totally Driven Entertainment's Facebook page. Remember that you guys can follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Google Play now. We're working on Spotify. We're here on Blog Talk. We are on iTunes. We are on Spreaker. We are on Stitcher. We're slowly but surely going to be everywhere soon. Don't forget to tune in Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern time for Straight Football Talk. We've returned. We're back after the holidays. We've returned, and we're going to be talking about the draft. We're going to be making some bets, I think, Sunday, some interesting bets. Last season, if you guys recall, at the beginning of this last season, I had to wear an Eagles jersey, but the joke was on them at the end of the season. I was the Super Bowl victor. But another big announcement for you guys before I go off the air. We got a pre-WrestleMania show Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, with the returning Magic Mike Ferrara, and I will be co-hosting it with him. We're going to go down the entire WrestleMania card, and we're going to be talking about the Conor McGregor incident. If you guys didn't hear about the Conor McGregor incident, just turn on the TV and flip to ESPN for a few minutes, and you'll get to hear Dana White and his perplexity of what he's going to do about the antics of Conor McGregor. We're going to be talking about it tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time here on Totally Driven Entertainment. Guys, that's all I've got for you today. I hope you guys enjoy your weekend. Remember, guys, stay driven.